Hello, ramblers and gamblers. Josh Rosenthal here. Thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing. Find me on IG at Rambling and Gambling and the old email, Rambling and Gambling Podcast at gmail.com. Awesome, awesome episode today. Awesome, awesome guest today. Very respected handicapper. Not hyperbole when I say he really is, to some, one of the best to ever do it. Steve Fezzik. You can find at pregame.com and on Twitter at Fezzik Sports. Steve, in case you don't know, is the one and only person to win the Westgate Super Contest twice in 08 and 09. This has been called the Super Bowl of sports gambling. That was the title of an article about the contest that ran in the New York Times back in 2014. We're going to talk to Steve about that. He does give some picks. We talk about this upcoming slate of NFL games. But the part that I loved, the part that I had so much fun with that I really hope people stick around for, is Steve gives all of these great stories about Vegas and gambling. They don't all take place in Vegas, and they're amazing. I could listen to Steve talk for hours, and he just really brought his A game today. So let me get out of the way, let you hear from Steve. Here he is, the one and only Steve Fezzik. Okay, Steve, for anyone who doesn't know, what is the Westgate Super Contest and how in the world did you win it twice?
Okay, so the Westgate Super Contest is the sports betting main event, if you will. Everyone's familiar with the World Series of Poker main event, Jamie Gold, Moneymaker and the like. So it's open to everyone. $1,500 entry fee. You enter, you make five picks a week. At the end of the year, they crown a sports betting champion. I won it in 2018 and 2019 back to back. And I had a run of contests, frankly, during that 3-year period. I won five contests, and that was two of them. I was running very good.
That was it 18, 19, or 08, 09?
Oh, I misspoke. 2008, 2009. So, see, I'm getting old. I'm off 10 years. It happens.
Hey, man, you can still pick them, and that's why we've got you here. I appreciate it. All right, so before all that, you're a self-proclaimed math geek. That's what you texted me. I love that. You were on the chess team at Northwestern. You became an actuary, a VP at an insurance company. What made you decide to go from that to full-time gambling?
So I'm at Transamerica in Los Angeles, working downtown LA, commuting from Marina Del Rey, and I lived in Huntington Beach, big commute. And I discovered in the 90s how beatable sports was. So literally myself and a few other friends, we were going to Vegas or Reno or wherever in Nevada, other states weren't legal at the time, to gamble each and every weekend. And we were making more per hour, certainly doing that, than what it was with my regular job. You hear this all the time, Josh, and it really was true. It was a lot easier back then in the mid 1990s, the stories I could tell you in terms of what was available. But I have to say, you know what, this year is probably the easiest year to win betting sports as it's been the past 15 years with the legalization and the opening up throughout the country of new sports books.
Elaborate on that. What made it easier about now?
Competition. So new sports books want to bring in new customers. Customer acquisition is everything. If you see their reports, they're always talking about, you know, customer acquisitions. So their menus are so expanded, larger, that there's more things to bet on. And the bigger the menu you have, the more the opportunity. I'll give an example, one obscure prop last night. We all saw the Monday Night Football game. They had a prop, will there be a successful 2-point conversion? Well, normally that's a big underdog that you'll get one. But with the weather as bad as it was logical some of the times teams scoring, especially going into the wind, would forego the extra point kick and go for two. Ultimately, I only talk about props I win, that props, you know, cashed in the first quarter.
That's great advice, though, because we hear this from experts we have on this podcast a lot that, hey, sides and totals, you might not want to do that for the casual gamblers that we mostly cater to here. However, if you look deep down that menu that you're mentioning now into the props and whatnot, you might be able to find some plays that are a little less picked over, might give you more of an opportunity. Is that fair?
More than fair. I'm going to make a bold statement here. People are going to get mad at me, but I'm right and they're wrong.
Uh-huh.
If you're smart enough to win betting NFL sides, which is very difficult, if you can win consistently betting NFL sides, then you are going to destroy props because it's like playing chess versus checkers. The ability to spot props that are, it's not unusual. Every week there are guys that are going to spot 65% props. And they're like, well, why aren't they billionaires? Because the limits are a lot lower. So you try to get down as much as you can, and there might be a $500 limit on that prop. And maybe you can bet it at three or four books that offer it. I'll talk about a prop I lost last night. This was a bad prop. I thought it was a great prop. I bet longest punt under 63 and a half. I said, this is the greatest bet ever. Look at how horrible the weather is. But it's a 30-mile-an-hour tailwind. Not so good. If it had been a crosswind, fine.
Tailwind, no good. The LA Times profiled you in 2006. This was before you'd won the Super Contest, so you were already fairly big time. The title of the article was "When You Wager, He Wins." And it said basically that your strategy was to predict what squares, casual sports gamblers, were going to do and then bet the opposite way before other sharps could do the same thing. Has that changed at all for you in the last 15 or so years?
Dramatically. So the squares don't bet as much as they used to, and there aren't the opportunities that there were back in 2006. Having said that, you know what? With the legalization and all these different sports books, I can only imagine what an independent book in Iowa is dealing on a typical Iowa bowl game, by example. Obviously, you'd be betting against Iowa, although Iowa's good in bowl games usually. But just as, you know, same with, can you imagine what the lines are in Mississippi and some of these states? Not a lot of pro gamblers residing in Mississippi. I'm sure there's a few, but obviously, you know, New Jersey and Vegas are the choices. So opportunity there. But back in 2006, by example, I'm 40 miles from the border of California. I would drive to Prim, independent books in Prim, and routinely on a Saturday afternoon, a UCLA or USC game would be 2.5 points higher than in Vegas because you couldn't bet on apps back then. And think about it. Who was betting on USC? Well, every single car that was on I-15 heading to Vegas the night before and that day of the game.
What's your basic strategy now?
Wow. Find bets that are going to cash more than 60% of the time in the prop bet market. This is terrible. I'm going to get in trouble for this. Spend as little time as humanly possible. And I still spend 15 hours a week doing it, handicapping NFL sides and totals, because it really is a complete and utter waste of time in terms of getting a big edge. Yeah, you'll get some good bets. I just bet some stuff. And the nice thing is, if you're a syndicate, you can bet whatever you want, up to like 100,000. But you're looking for 54% bets. So think about that. If you have a 54% bet, that's a 3% edge. If you have a 65% bet, what is that? Like a 30% edge. So it's like 10 times more profitable per dollar invested.
And you're still focusing on contests in a big way too, right?
No. The contests are such a crapshoot that people ask me all the time, oh, do you know who you're going to play in the contest? And I'm like, an hour before the deadline, I figure it out. Having said that, I'm making a nice run in the Circa Millions. I think I've got three entries that should be in the top like 150 right now.
Let me stop you real quick. That's why I was asking. Circa Millions, this is another really big time contest with really big name handicappers. I think one of your entries is what, like top 40 out of several thousand people?
Yes. And it went 2 and 3. So it's going to fall back to like 80th place. The other two entries did better this week. Long story short, I think I just cashed in the Circa Millions quarterly because I finished one of my entries finished 17 and 3. Now here's a bad beat story. One guy went 18 and 2, so he's going to win the 171,000. All right.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to chop with like four or five guys. The results are going to come out this morning. So we're going to chop second and third prize. I'm going to get like 15,000. Okay.
Yeah.
Here's the bad beats. I just found out who the guy was. I didn't know him who won. He listens to me. He said, oh, I played based upon your recommendations and went 5-0 this week.
So somebody beat you with your own advice.
Yes. But I mean, but it's kind of nice. You know, you're like, all right, really helped somebody out. But I would have tied for, it would have been a big chop. What would have I would have been in first, though, if Atlanta plus 11 and a half covered. Really liked Atlanta. Not getting in on the 1 yard line early in the game did me in. Russell Gage did me no favors dropping the touchdown pass to end the game either.
You don't have to answer this one, and we're about to move on to the games, but I'm going to ask because you just brought up winnings. I know for your two super contest wins, I believe you've pulled in about 200K for each. The payouts have changed over time as that contest has grown. Your career, not, you know, betting typical games against the book, just the contests. You have any ballpark on what you've pulled in?
It's just a little over $1 million in contests, but be careful now with contests. You hear that all the time. Pro poker players, he has $5 million in lifetime earnings and he's down because he's investing so much. But to be fair, I don't enter many contests. It's too much of a J-O-B job. So they all have deadlines at different times. Think about how horrible that is. If you have a, like right now, Saturday, 3 p.m. Circa deadline, that means I got to be available 2 to 3. I can't put in my place early because I need the best information. The Westgate, the deadline's 9 p.m. if I put it in my app, midnight if I'm there in person. Okay, I put it in the app right before 9 p.m. So you start stacking all these contests one after another. Who has time to do any work? All you're doing is putting in contest plays if you're in like 6 or 7 of the contests. So I entered the Circa, I entered the Westgate, I entered the Survivor, which I got eliminated in Circa, and I played the season win contest in the Westgate, which actually got a shot at winning. I'm doing real well on that one.
Steve, the fact that you just very casually said, oh, I've won just a little bit over $1 million is one of the many reasons that I'm so excited to have you on the Rambling and Gambling podcast. All right, let's do some week 14 lines. I cannot believe we're already at week 14. Here's how this is going to work. I'm going to give you a game, some odds, and just take it absolutely anywhere you want to go. We don't have to spend a ton of time on each game. There's no pressure to make a pick or anything like that. Just give me whatever you want to give me. We're going to do 5 games total, and all these lines are from FanDuel as of early Tuesday, which is when we're recording this pod. Start out west. Rams at Cards. Cardinals favored by 3, over-unders 51.5. This is the Monday nighter. Rams 8-4, just knocked off the Jags. But before that, they had lost 3 in a row to the Packers, Niners, and Titans. Arizona is 10-2. They've got Kyler Murray back, just beat the Bears. Steve, what do you think?
I think you got to answer one question to handicap this game, and that's Stafford's health. So Stafford has not been a good quarterback, had 3 straight games throwing a pick 6, and some of them were ugly, frankly, the Tennessee game in particular. If Stafford was healthy, I think the Rams plus 3 needing the game more would be the way to look in this game, but I don't know if that's the case, and frankly, I haven't gone back and rewatched or watched, even looked at the blowout they had against Jacksonville. So not being able to answer that question, I'm going to be on the sidelines for this game right now.
Last week, Kyler became the 4th youngest player to reach 10,000 passing yards. He's 24. Do you want to guess the 3 guys ahead of him, Steve? You have any idea the guys who accomplished that at a younger age?
Repeat that question again.
Sorry. Kyler became the 4th youngest player to reach 10,000 passing yards. He's 24. Who do you think the 3 are that finished ahead of him?
Mahomes?
No, that would have been my
really?
It's hard. These answers surprise me.
Okay, but go ahead and tell me.
Okay, number 3, Marino. He was 24 as well. Number 2, Jameis, 23 years old. Number 1, I was thinking also it was going to be like Mahomes or some young guy because they pass so much more these days. Drew Bledsoe. 23 years old, 299 days. Can you believe that?
You could have multiple choice that and given me 300 choices, and I would not have landed on Drew Bledsoe.
I know.
Marino, man. Obviously, I would have gotten because everyone knows what a great rookie year he had.
Yeah.
After that, and Jameis, no. Great question.
Thank you. Appreciate that. All right. Big game here, as it always is in the DC region. Sunday, Dallas, land 4. In Washington, over under 47.5. Cowboys 8-4, coming off that Thursday night win over the Saints. So they are rested. They've got a 2-game lead in the maybe not a done deal yet NFC East. The WFTs, meanwhile, in second place in the division. And amazingly, they are the winners of 4 straight, now 6-6. And during that streak, they have taken down the Raiders, Seahawks, Panthers, and Bucks. Not to mention, one more thing, Steve, we brought this up last week. Washington has a ton of games left against division opponents. In fact, they only play division opponents from here on out. They've got two against the Cowboys, two against the Eagles, one against the Giants. What do you got in this one?
Well, the Washington football team, maybe addition by subtraction, defense was supposed to be awesome with all their youth, and it was bad. And then they had some injuries, and it got better. So I can't really comment if guys were just being undisciplined, not staying in their lanes and the like, but clearly the football team is playing better. The wise guys hate McCarthy. We remember he said he studied analytics for a year. I can not absolutely confirm this, but I believe he was just at the Ponderosa on a nightly basis and getting a massage or something else, because he does not impress us. Tough spot for the Cowboys in that they're paying Zeke Elliott all this money. And we all know Pollard is better. I guess Zeke, he blocks better. I don't know too many fullbacks that, you know, get paid what Zeke gets paid. So, that holds Dallas back. Obviously, Lamb is a tremendous asset for wide receiver, but the offense, Dak does not look right. Dak does not look healthy. So that would be the number one handicap. I'll land on the football team here.
Interesting. Okay. Were you surprised to see that Dallas is laying 4 in Washington?
No, because actually I've got my power ratings here. So I've got for each and every team, I'm just finalizing. I'm making last adjustments. So I have Dallas 3 points better than the average team. That sounds not so optimistic about Dallas, but I've got Washington 2 points worse than an average team. So high level math here, that makes the game 5 on a neutral. You know, Washington has it's in your neck of the woods. Maybe you can explain to me, why'd they go from RFK, a baseball stadium that had this enormous home field advantage, to the suburbs where everybody eats, they have wine and cheese and they politely golf clap, and you have a 1-point home field? That gets me to 4.
It's not golf clubs, man. It's people stop showing up after years. That's the real situation out here. I'm hoping that changes for, a team that's won 4 straight, and it's Dallas coming into town. So fingers crossed. We'll see. Buffalo at Tampa. Tampa favored by 3, over under 52.5. Buffalo just lost a weird one to New England Monday night. We talked about it. Pats only threw the ball 3 times. Bills now 7-5, and they've actually alternated wins and losses for the past 8 weeks now. Tampa 9-3, most recently beat the Falcons, something Tom Brady has done a lot. Darren Revelle had this. Brady is now 10-0 against the Falcons. The last quarterback to start 10-0 versus a particular opponent, Andrew Luck, against the Titans from 2012 to 18. Steve, any thoughts on Buffalo and Tampa?
Well, just a quick thought on Monday Night Football. I don't know what the Bills are doing. How do they wind up going into the wind in the second and fourth quarters? So last time I checked, there's more scoring in the second and fourth quarters. So having the wind is more important than they defer at the when they win the coin toss, that's fine. But in the second half, you absolutely have to take the wind in the fourth quarter, not the ball. The ball is meaningless. You don't want the ball because you don't have any advantage on a total that's this low for this game. And I really think I get it. New England outplayed them, but I still think Buffalo steals the game. If they would have had the wind in the fourth quarter when the New England defense was finally getting tired, as far as this game, it sets up beautifully for Tampa Bay. Think about this. It was nasty in Buffalo. It was cold, wintry mix and the like. Exhausting game. All New England does is run right at your gut, and now you got to go to the heat and humidity of Tampa Bay. That is not a good situational spot for a reeling Bills team. If you bet it, I'd lay the 3. The line should go up to 3.5 or 4.
Interesting. All right, one more little stat here for you that I thought was good. Gronk, he had 2 touchdowns last week, so he's now caught 90 regular season touchdowns from Brady. It's significant because that second one passed Philip Rivers and Antonio Gates for the 2nd most touchdown connections in NFL history. Number 1 with 112. So we're talking 22 more Manning and Harrison. So they still got a ways to go, but I thought that was.
And also Gronk, they say Michael Douglas doesn't make a bad movie. Yeah. Gronk does not make a bad commercial. He's phenomenal.
I'm with you. I like it. Ravens at Browns. Browns favored by 2.5, over under 41.5. Browns 6-6. They're coming off a bye. Lost to the Ravens 2 weeks ago. So kind of a weird schedule quirk there. They're playing them again. Ravens 8-4. Lost another nutty one to the Steelers last week. And Steve, they've got a really tough schedule the rest of the way. The Ravens do. They've got Browns, Packers, Bengals, Rams, Steelers. What do you think?
Yeah, so I'll pull back the curtain here. I've got Baltimore. I always start with my power ratings. So Baltimore, I got a point and a half better than an average team. And I got Cleveland a half point worse. So that's a 2-point difference on a neutral. I'd make Baltimore a 2-point favorite. Cleveland's home, give them 2 points. Boom, pick them. So we should take Baltimore catching two or more. No, because you nailed it. The situational spot is like one of the worst of the years because you've got a situation where Baltimore just played two tough physical division games and Cleveland's coming off of a bye. You have to give that situation, especially because Cleveland lost 2 weeks ago to Baltimore. It's got to be worth a couple points. Guess what? That puts the line where it's at. And here's the ugly truth. I'm paid to give out opinions on games. The vast majority of NFL games are lined correctly. The edges are small when you're betting sides, and you have to get to those edges typically earlier in the week. So here's a game where it's a great spot for Cleveland, but everyone knows about it, and there's a tax on Cleveland.
Okay. All right. Very interesting. That's a good heads up there. You think of Lamar as this guy who's insanely dangerous in short yardage situations, right? Because he's such a threat on the ground. Well, get a load of this one. According to ESPN stats and info, after that 2-point conversion debacle at the end of the Steelers game, Lamar is now 3-for-10 on 2 PCs in his career, either rushing or passing. That is the second worst mark in the last 20 seasons. I'd ask you which quarterback you think is worse, but it's so random. I doubt you ever get it. Do you want to guess?
I don't.
Nick Foles, 4-for-16.
I was going to go Philip Rivers as far as a guy that just seems like he always had trouble.
Yeah, I could see that. I don't have the full rankings. I only know Foles.
But I don't think we can blame Lamar for Mark Andrews not being able to catch the ball suddenly, you know, on that last play. But I do blame Lamar going back 2 weeks ago. You hear, oh, quarterback throws 4 interceptions. And a lot of times it's tipped. It's not really his fault. Someone runs the wrong route. I have never seen such inaccuracy in that. There was one in particular where he's got a guy, Lamar's guy wide open against Cleveland, and he zings it, not Mahomes 3/4. He zings it with his normal throwing motion. And it's like the laws of physics. He changed. He threw it right at the linebacker, a good 15 degrees to the left of where he was aiming. What is this? Four interceptions. A lot of them are like at first and second down in low pressure plays. Lamar is not right.
I was going to say, I think his accuracy at least seems to me to have gotten worse as the weeks have gone on. Would you agree with that?
I would. And it seems to me when he has really fast velocity on his passes, he's extremely inaccurate. He still throws a nice Nerf ball when he has to an open receiver. But he just can't, you know, gun it in like some of the other quarterbacks can.
Last one we'll do in depth. Vegas at Kansas City, KC laying 9.5. Over under 48.5. Raiders 6-6, just lost to Washington. KC, they're cruising. They're 8-4 and have won 5 straight, including against the Broncos last weekend, Steve.
These are very difficult games to figure out. So on the Raiders, you've had a year full of distractions with the Gruden thing, with the wide receiver tragedy, with everything that's gone on. And now, Waller, their most important offensive player, is injured. If he plays, he's not going to be 100%. I don't think I can get behind the Raiders. But Kansas City, can their defense really carry them? I mean, that's what's been happening. If you're watching Mahomes, his mechanics are all messed up. I mean, early in his career, he would go against his body. He would not conform to the normal rules that quarterbacks have. But literally, he's jumping up like he's Michael Jordan now, you know, on some of his passes, and some of the media is finally calling him out saying, this is just so flawed in terms of, you know, his mechanics. How can he succeed?
Collinsworth was on him Sunday night.
Yeah. And he should be Chris Collinsworth, former Cincinnati Bengal during their Super Bowl run. So loved in Cincinnati, does a great job. I actually think he has part ownership of the stats company.
PFF, yeah, Pro Football Focus.
Yeah, so he does a great job. But you know what? When you're number one in QBR and you're kicking butt and not throwing interceptions, you can do whatever you want. But that's no longer the case with Mahomes. And I got to feel, bottom line, these are two probably go-against teams, and they're playing each other, so I got to pass.
Speaking of PFF, I found this to be interesting. They found, you know, they grade like basically every throw from every quarterback. Apparently, PFF says that 9 of Mahomes' 12 interceptions, they did not grade as turnover worthy throws. So you mentioned the drops that the receivers had, and that's been an issue. According to PFF, only 3 throws that Mahomes has made this season should be picks, even though he's actually thrown 12.
Well, I've seen several that got dropped by the defense in the past 3 weeks. So that's why they're winning of late. So I think maybe it has evened out. You know, quick note on PFF and Football Outsiders. These are all great tools, but none of these companies are infallible. I always joke around. People get mad at me, but I'll say it. You know, you never hear a headline, you know, former PFF analyst quits job to bet sports for a living, etc. So it's a tool that helps you on your own, you know, to win in betting. But recognize, first and foremost, most of these companies are information-based companies that are trying to give you the most information you can to make your own decisions. They're not a panacea or something you just copy and suddenly you're going to make a ton of money, typically.
Fair point. Anything else on this week's slate? Any other games that have your eye that you're looking at?
You know, I just want to mention, as far as futures, you hear this all the time, you know, oh, there's outstanding value, like college basketball season has started and everybody wants to play on futures. The sportsbooks holds on the futures are astronomically high, like 40%, 45%. The books, you know, love booking that stuff. And that's why if you look at some of the holds in the individual states.
Real quick, define holds, just in case.
A hold would be for every $100 you bring in, what percentage does the book wind up winning? So a drunk baby betting sides will lose 4.5%, just throwing darts, right?
Right.
And you always hear the public is getting smarter and smarter. Well, not true. The public lost 9% in New Jersey in September and October. They lost over 10% in states like Montana and South Dakota, all right? So to summarize, a drunk baby randomly picking teams does twice as well as the average better in New Jersey. And remember, there are pros in New Jersey. There are guys winning and winning big betting. And despite that, so that means everybody else is losing probably at more than 10%. And why are they doing that? Because they're betting ridiculous bets like who's going to win the Super Bowl. They're playing these same game in-game parlays where they play a 3-team parlay and they're like, oh, how could this lose? I'm going to play Kelsey over with Tyreek Hill over with Mahomes over. It's all correlated. Well, yes, it's correlated, but the books are short paying you to the extreme level on these in-game parlays, same game parlays. And so you're getting cheated when you calculate all the numbers to the point that God couldn't win trying to play these in most cases.
Let me throw this one at you because you are most definitely not a drunk baby. Is there a bet, any bet, doesn't have to be one that we talked about, that you feel especially confident in heading into week 14?
Wow. I haven't done all my handicapping work. So no, the answer is no. There's not one bet that I would say you absolutely have to get to. I'll say Tampa Bay -3 hosting Buffalo would be my best bet at this point in time. But I'll give you a bonus because I'm feeling a little frisky. Over, it's not a FanDuel, I don't believe it's at DraftKings. Oklahoma City, you can get plus money on this bet, under 23.5 wins. I don't see how Oklahoma City, I think they won last night, is going to get to 20 wins. So that would be like a best bet season win number. And I think this is an example of the math geek analytics. They forecast how many games a team's going to win, but is Oklahoma City going to be a buyer or a seller as the year progresses? Obviously a seller. And I don't think the bench is very good based upon their 112 point loss the other night.
Well, and remember too, last season, they shut down SGA, Gilgeous Alexander for like the full second half of the season. Right. So that's a good point. I like this, Steve. I wasn't expecting you to veer into NBA today. I'll take it.
Thank goodness you didn't ask me SGA and to spell his name, former Clipper. Thank you.
I still don't even know. I think it's Shea Gilgeous Alexander, but I still get tripped up on that one. And I watch a lot of NBA.
You know, I got a lot of friends too cool for school and they'll send me props. And all the time they'll say, play against C-Mac and like play against Deontay. And I'm like, I want the team. I want the position. And I want the, and I want the last name. Thank you. Don't be too cool for school when you're sending me the plays and make me look up who the heck Deontay is.
Okay. It is time for a segment we call Long Shot or Lock. Real simple. I'm going to give you a bet that I'm thinking about making. I'll tell you why I like it. And then I want you to tell me if you think it is a long shot or a lock. And I should mention, Steve, been kind of hot in this segment lately. I threw out an Arizona and Washington teaser last week. It hit. And last week's guest, Neil Greenberg of the Washington Post, said it was a lock. He nailed it. So no pressure, Steve. And I actually kind of think I might already know your answer. I'm a little fearful of this one. Nevertheless, here's what we've got for this week. We are rolling with another two-team, six-point teaser, true Wong teaser this time, because we'll be moving through the 3 and the 7 in both cases, and the totals for these games are both under 49. I'm getting it at minus 120 on DraftKings. First leg, I'm taking Denver. They're laying 8 at home against Detroit, so I'm moving them to -2. The Broncos are one of those teams that mostly beats the teams that they are supposed to beat. Their losses have come against the Chiefs, Eagles, Browns, Raiders, Steelers, and Ravens. All those teams are 500 or better, with the exception of the Eagles, and they're pretty close. They're 6 and 7. Also, Detroit is Detroit. They stink. I watched that game last weekend. Actually, I was in Minnesota last weekend. I watched it with my Vikings fan father-in-law. The Vikings choked. Lions had no business winning that one. Here's my second leg. This is the one I'm worried about based on our previous conversation. I was going to take the Ravens. They're getting 2 in Cleveland, so I was going to move them to +8. Right now, Ravens secondary, very banged up. Thing is, so is Baker Mayfield. I'm not sure the Browns are able to take advantage of the secondary. Also, these AFC North games, they tend to be pretty close. The Ravens won their previous matchup this season, 16-10. Not positive they win this one, but I don't think they get blown out either. I'm expecting kind of an ugly war of attrition type of game. So I like the idea of taking the Ravens and more than the touchdown. So there it is, Steve. I'm going with Baltimore +8, Denver -2. Be real with me. I can take it. Be as harsh as you want. Is this a long shot or a lock?
It's a lock. It's solid. I love the Denver teaser because, let's face it, Detroit, I've got unconfirmed reports that the last Detroit player just went to sleep last night, still celebrating their first victory. And over half the team had a blood alcohol level above 0.16 by the time they went to sleep last night. So obviously, monkey off their back, 4 straight close games that they could have won. They finally get the win. It's a terrible spot, and they head to altitude to get smashed. The second leg, yes, there would be more variance associated with a game like this with such a great spot for Cleveland. But now that Baltimore is off of the loss, they absolutely need the game like blood. It should be a close game. Little background, by the way, on these Wong teasers. I am friends with Stanford Wong. I work with Stanford Wong. I'm the one that told him about these teasers back in 1999. And like, he would have discovered himself. I mean, and I'm not absolutely certain about that, but we certainly were in discussions about this. So anyone that's unfamiliar, get his Stanford Wong's book, Sharp Sports Betting. There's an entire chapter on teasers that explains why you want to tease through the quarter. You nailed it, Josh, 3 through 7. Ideally, you want home teams. Home teams have a little less variance associated with them. So 8-point favorites are more dangerous than eight-point favorites on the road are more dangerous to fail than 8-point favorites at home. But this certainly qualifies. And a quick note on those teasers. There's, again, I go back to the too cool for school guys that like are giving out all these teasers because it's not, they don't actually bet. They're just recommending bets so they can do whatever they want. And they're talking all the time. They tease NFL totals. They tease NFL 5s to 11s. I can tell you there's not one respected pro that plays anything in teasers except for the Wong teasers through the 3 and through the 7. And part of that is you have to lay minus 120 now. You've got to hit each individual leg 75% of the time to make money on those teasers. So you cannot have plays that aren't the pure Wong teasers, but yours is. It gets my full endorsement.
Where'd you work with Stanford Wong? Give me a little more background on that one.
Yeah, so Stanford, he had his company, Pie Press. It was in Las Vegas, and I actually rented out a room from him where I needed to have some computer set up, and Mike, I was with a sports betting syndicate at the time, and so we were just operating and betting, and he was alongside of us, so I wasn't working necessarily with him, but we just share information on stuff we were betting and the like. Extremely intelligent. By the way, you know, blackjack's a relatively easy game to get an edge off of. If you, I could teach you how to card count in 2 minutes if you'd like. You play blackjack?
I actually, so the next segment that we do in the last segment is, I call it the quick hitters. They're actually kind of quick hitters. And I have a blackjack question for you. I love blackjack. My wife and I will sit at a blackjack table for longer than I would care to admit. Give me your 2 minute blackjack spiel.
Okay. So number one, there's a great book called Comp City that explains you just get the $1.99 card. So this will take you 30 seconds to learn and just shows you, oh, I have A6 and the dealer has a 4. I'm supposed to double down. It'll say D.
This is the card that you're not supposed to pull out when you're sitting at the table.
They don't care. It's fine. You're A-OK.
I've been told to put away the card.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah. But well, in Vegas, they've always allowed it because it doesn't give you an edge. You're just playing at a small disadvantage. Depending on the rules, it's about minus 0.5%. But you can get great comps off of it. So you can play for an hour. Think about it. You make 200 bets. You should lose one unit. So you've been 100 a hand, 200 bets. Now the truth is you're going to lose 3,000 or win 2,800. It's going to be great variance, but in the long run, you're going to lose $100. And then you're going to be a VIP. You get free rooms, free shows, free whatever. If you're $100 better playing for 4 hours and you can slow the game down, take bathroom breaks, pretend you're getting a cell phone call, but you get the edge by card counting. In a nutshell, you're not keeping track of every card. Every deck has 20 little cards, 20 big cards. The big cards are the 10, Jack, Queen, King, Ace. Little cards, the 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You hate those little cards. They suck. You don't get blackjacks. You double down, you get a 4. Dealer busts with the 10s. That's good. So you like there being lots of 10s in the deck. So first hand, you get a pair of jacks. I'm the dealer, I get a pair of queens. Every one of those cards is a minus. Minus 1. Now you get a running count of minus 4. There's 4 more little cards than big cards. That's horrible. Take the opposite, you get a 6, you get 2 6s, you hit, you get another 6, and I'm rolling off all these little cards, and I have 5 little cards as a dealer, and all of a sudden, we've got a running count of plus 8. If it's a double deck, you got to divide by the decks remaining, so that's a plus 4. If you got a true count of plus 1 or higher, you have the edge. So if you can count one deck, you can count 6 decks, you can count 12 decks. You either can count or you don't. You're just counting plus 1, minus 1. Little trick, if you see like a king and a 4, they cancel. That counts as a 0. 7, 8, 9s counts as 0. You now know how to card count.
I love this. Let me ask you. I know you've had a lot of success in poker tourneys and also blackjack tourneys. I never totally understood the blackjack competitions, only because it seems to me that, you know, it's so dependent on the cards that you were dealt, whereas it's less so in poker. Am I wrong on that? What kind of strategy do you go into a blackjack competition with?
Boy, you know, Anthony Curtis and David Matthews, he won the world champion. David did a blackjack 1 year, would be much better to ask about this. But the most important thing is the end game strategy. We all watch Jeopardy and you see that final Jeopardy and you've got these extremely so intelligent people. They're so smart at everything. Complete idiots when it comes to Final Jeopardy. And Jeopardy, James, frankly, exposed all of them.
Yeah.
As an example, you have 12,000 and I have 10,000 going into Final Jeopardy. And this happens in blackjack all the time. The worst thing possible is for you to go ahead and lock me out and make a substantial bet. And I go all in and bet my full 10,000. If you're going to take the high, I got to take the low. So in Jeopardy, I know if you have 12 and I have 10, you're going to bet $8,000 and $1 as sure as the sunshine comes up tomorrow. So if you get it right, you're going to have $20,000 and $1 and I'm going to lose even if I get the question right. But despite that, and despite being a Mensa member, I'm still going to wager the full $10,000 because I apparently didn't realize I was going to be on Jeopardy and did no research and just go all in. And so the same thing's true with the blackjack tournament. You have to like forecast what other people are going to bet and the like. Getting the lead, though, is so critical. As long as you have the lead going in the final round, you can't wait for the final hand. You got to do whatever you can because like one player might advance from each table. And if you have the lead, then you have a key edge, especially if like it's you against another guy and he bets all his chips and you bet almost all your chips. There's two ways for you to win. You both win or you both lose.
So it sounds like you're actually playing the cards less than you are playing your opponent and your opponent's bank.
That's absolutely right. And card counting, some feel, is like a detriment because people will card count during a blackjack tournament. It's much more important, frankly, the end game strategy in the last three hands. And you don't want to be distracted by other elements. You want to just focus on the end game.
Just so the listeners know, you finished what, like third in like one of the really big blackjack tourneys, right? That like this is a thing and you played the best and you did very well against the best. Is that accurate?
Yes, but I want to caveat this. I am not like one of the top 100 or 150 blackjack players in the world. But what happened is that to get the final to the final four in the, at the blackjack ball, they have this once a year. Stopped inviting me for a few years, huh? I'll see if I can get I stopped going, and then Max Rubin stopped inviting me. But there was a questionnaire about general gambling knowledge, and the final four of the people that had the best scores on the test, and it's multiple choice. And I'm a good test taker, and I'm a good base. I have a good understanding, and the questions might be as obscure as like they might say in single deck. How would you play a pair of sevens against a 10? Kind of a cool hand because in single deck, because you've removed two sevens from the deck, you actually stand because it's so less likely that you're going to get a seven when you hit. Whereas in double deck or six deck, you would go ahead and hit because there's still plenty of sevens. And it's somewhat of a close call that flips into your side. So there'd be questions like that, but there'd just be questions like, what would be the closest? You're in Winnemucca, what's the closest sports book to you? Something crazy like that, just out of the blue. I used a sports betting question, but I'm just throwing that out that most people wouldn't know what the answer is, and it would be multiple choice. So I was lucky to make the final four, and then I won one contest to get to the final three. And then the guys who truly are pros, Munchkin, I think, won it that year, who's great. But my favorite contest, they had a contest where you had to pitch a card forward into a basket, all right?
Uh-huh.
And that was one of the competitions, and three like advantage players failed miserably. And then one advantage player laughed at everyone, crumpled the card into a ball, swish, right into the basket. No
genius.
Problem.
Genius. Not that is so random. I had no idea about any of that.
No, there's no rule. It gets like Squid Game, whatever you want to do to advance while the other players get eliminated.
All right. I got a few more semi quick hitters for you. Take as long as you want. I just don't want to use up too much of your time. I got this from that LA Times profile that I mentioned. They said Steve Fezzik is not your real name, that you went with a pseudonym they reported for safety's sake. Here's my question, though. They also mentioned that Fezzik is the name of Andre the Giant's character in Princess Bride. Is that why you picked it?
Yeah, I always liked the big lug Fezzik. I like the idea that in The Princess Bride, you might remember he loses a duel against one guy. And they're like, what happens? And he says, well, you're so used to fighting hundreds of men at once. You forget how to fight just one.
Uh-huh.
So I kind of feel that way, you know, like in these contests, I'm going in Circa Millions, I'm going against 4,000 people. So it's like the Dread Pirate Roberts, you know, it's like, it's going to have a good performance to get through these guys.
Do you, if like, I realize that you started gambling in a different time where you were actually, like you told us earlier, going into the casino, that kind of thing. Do you think that you would still use a pseudonym if you were starting today? Would you be as concerned about safety when, you know, presumably you're not a very well-known guy at this point?
Yeah, well, things are different too, because you didn't get used to be able to bet on the app. So now if when I'm betting, all my money's like in these different apps and I'm just betting that way, it was a different world. I was living close to the strip in the Meridian Apartments. And like my buddy, the Midnight Cowboy, and I, we like literally had a shoebox full of like chocolates and banana chips. You know, we'd run out to the Mirage, you know, and grab like 15,000 in chips and just bet. And it was just a shoebox. I didn't even have a safe like in my closet at the time. So like, I'm not going to be too hypercritical myself, but I would say my security was like a D back then, and now it's an A+. Yes.
I don't want to take up too much of your time. So pick one of these two things that I absolutely love talking to you, Steve. This is great. In your previous answers, you just mentioned the Midnight Cowboy. Before that, you were like, oh yeah, that time I was in a betting syndicate. Pick one of those things. Tell me more about them. Either Midnight Cowboy or betting syndicate.
Betting group. So I've got a friend, Ryan S, I won't use his last name. And he goes up, I tell him about Wendover, Nevada. And I tell you what, these Utah people, you know, great God-fearing people, but they're not good gamblers. So Wendover is on the corner of Utah and Nevada. You have to fly up to Salt Lake City, 80 miles on I-80 through the Salt Flats. It was like going back to 1925 before Lefty Rosenthal explained how sports betting works. To give an example, there was
casino,
a place
called the right Lefty Rosenthal Casino. Is that, am I right on that one? Yeah.
Yeah, they had Red Lion. I can still pick winners, and that's that, as he says. But the Red Lion had a 10-team parlay card that paid 800 for one. They had a bonus if you got 9 out of 10 that paid 50 for one. If you added it all up, if you played all 1,024 combinations, you were guaranteed to make 25%. You know, that the player had the edge, just randomly throwing darts, 25% edge. They had a 7-team parlay card at the State Line and the other casino up there, the Rainbow, that paid 120 to 1. You had to hit 50.2% correct of your games to break even. 50.2. Long story short, Ryan and his buddy, when he went up there, destroyed Wendover, Nevada. Wendover refused to pay him. He went to the Nevada Gaming Commission. The Gaming Commission said, why aren't you paying them? And they said, well, he was flying under the radar and he was doing this, that, and the other thing. And they said, well, he was playing that way all season long. He'd been there, this like his fifth trip. Did you ever have any issues with him then? No. But suddenly when he clobbered them, they had big issues. And the Gaming Commission said, you got to pay that guy. And they did. And shortly after, all the casinos in Wendover, Nevada went from being independently operated to being Leroy's sports books.
Do you miss the old days at all?
I do. I used to love, I would drive out to Prim and Mesquite with all these independent books. And it was just like absolutely going back in time. You know, Barry Meadow wrote a book. I forgot the name of the book on blackjack, and he drives all through Nevada to every single casino and plays and documents his results playing blackjack. The stories he tells driving through Northern Nevada and some of the casinos, like I said, in Elko and Winnemucca and the like, are just, it's just must reading.
I'm throwing out my questions. I'm throwing them out. I don't even want to ask them. Steve, just one more story. Give me one more gambling story. I don't care what it is. Just hit me with something. You've got good stuff, man.
1994. I'm going to the Stardust, the old Stardust. Joe Lupo, and he's documenting the book, The Odds, which is a great gambling book. You got to read that by Chad Noman, okay?
Yeah.
And it documents gamblers and Joe Lupo, who's all wound so tight. And I give Joe credit. He's like the number two guy at Borgata now. And he's the first guy that discovered that these sucker bets on parlay cards were actually great advantage plays because they print the card on Wednesday. It wouldn't change the spreads. So if Aaron Murray was out, real quick,
parlay card, you have to pick what, 3 games and win them all to win your parlay card. But like you're saying, the lines oftentimes are stale because they physically print them out earlier in the week. Is that correct?
Exactly correct. So for instance, if Aaron Murray's out for Arizona, Carolina's catching 10, the card, and it's all half points, the card would be plus 10.5. The game closes 7, and you can still get the 10.5 by playing them, as you mentioned, in a 3-team parlay or a 6-team parlay or an 8-team parlay. I'll bore you of the math. It turns out the more games you played, the bigger your edge was. So I was bombing in 7 and 8-team parlays against the Stardust for months. And Lupo comes up to me, and after one particularly good weekend I had, he said, that's it. That's it. This is the first time I got barred. It's like 1995. He says, you're not, and back then they didn't, now a lot of places bar a lot of players, but this was really rare. And I could tell it was rare. He says, you can't play anymore. And he pauses and he says, for the rest of the year, you can't play for a year. All right. So I didn't play, but I figured, I didn't ask him, is that a fiscal year? Is that a calendar year? January 1st, I was back wearing my cowboy boots and my hat. At January 1st, I was playing at Samstown, a Stardust property, playing parlay cards again.
Cowboy boots and hat because
there aren't very many advantage playing rodeo participants. I'm sure they're out there, but in general, if you can sit at a poker game with a bunch of rodeo guys, that's probably a good table to be sitting in on.
Were you the guy from Dave Purnham's story?
No, I actually, but I'm familiar. That's Goose. He was a former, Goose is super, super sharp. And I've had my run-ins with Goose before. We were part of a betting syndicate. He was phenomenal. A Goose story. I cashed out like over 6 figures. This was a South Point 10 teamer. He picked me up. And I'm a little concerned for security. I've gotten better at this and the like. And Goose is hungry and he goes through the drive-in at McDonald's. right there half a mile away after I walk out with 100K. And I'm like, wouldn't it be better for us to like drive to the bank right away? I'm hungry. But very, very well versed. The Goose, I think the thing he did best, the old Maxim had a promo that if you signed up, you got $300 in free video poker play, essentially. He literally was walking homeless people off the street on Flamingo to sign up for a player's card. He'd get their player's card, say, you got to wait here. He would play the video poker through, lickety split, hoping he didn't hit a jackpot because that would be messy how it was going to get chopped up. He'd be okay with it. And then that person would make, on average, $275, $280. He'd hand him 100. He'd profit 180. He must have signed up 30 people in one day doing that.
That's fantastic. For anybody who doesn't remember or didn't listen, we've had Dave Purdom, who's an amazing ESPN reporter. He covers the gambling beat on this podcast before. And I asked him about this article he did a little while back that I just referenced. It was about parlay cards, and it was about guys dressing up in cowboy hats and boots because they were going to get thrown out. They weren't going to be able to play their parlay cards if the casinos actually recognized them because they were winning so much. So that's kind of cool. Coming full circle.
So up at the Cal Neva, the rodeo is big in Reno. We would dress up absolutely. And we would just walk up with stacks and stacks of $90 parlay cards. One more gambling story. So I don't know if something nefarious was going on, but in Reno in the 90s, in the late 90s, this is like at midnight, there would be a group that would come in that was rumored it was from Chinatown. They'd come in with a garbage bag full of envelopes. There'd be like 100 of them. And they would come up, they'd lock up the window for hours. And it was almost like they had taken the orders from Chinatown that people wanted to get down, driven across the hill, and they're putting in everyone's bets. And the window would be like locked up, the betting window, for 2 hours as they were putting in hundreds and hundreds of people's bets. The Cal Neva was making so much money, they didn't care that the advantage guys were having their edges playing against their parlay cards.
Steve, I have loved this. This was a podcast tour de force. You can come back anytime you want. I could listen to these stories all day, every day. And I am planning for once we get out of football season, like just kind of a crazy gambling story episode where I hope to hit a bunch of different, big time guys. You're going to hear from me, my man. I cannot thank you enough. But before we sign off here, anything else you want to throw out there? Anything else you want to add?
If you want to win at gambling, poker is your engine. Poker is so easy. I defy anyone. Get Ed Miller's book on No Limit, winning No Limit Poker, low stakes. Be disciplined. Don't play many hands. If you're losing, I don't believe you. I want to see it. I have to see you losing, playing 2-5 or less, no limit, especially in states like Mississippi and wherever else that is, the meccas. And the question, well, if you're so smart, why don't you just make money doing it all the time, Fezzik? Well, I could make money managing McDonald's also. It doesn't mean you're making tons of money. It just means you're winning money.
Steve Fezzik, two-time Super Contest winner. Find him at pregame.com on Twitter, at Fezzik Sports. This was fun. I love this. Thank you so incredibly much for coming on, Steve. You crushed it, man.
Thank you so much, Josh. I appreciate it.
Ladies and gents, how good was that? We got done with that interview. I stopped recording. I was like, Steve, when are you coming back on? It sounds like you will. It sounds like he had fun. So I know I did. I hope you wonderful listeners enjoyed that one too. Don't really have any extra stats that I'm all that crazy about this week, so we're going to skip that. I do, however, want to throw this out there. Do you, the listener, want more NBA? Remember, we did that split NFL-NBA pod back in October, and it was really well received. I got some great feedback. We could do another one, so just let me know. Email, IG, whatever. Reach out. I will respond really truthfully. Love hearing from you guys. As always, thanks for rating, subscribing, and reviewing. IG at Rambling and Gambling. Email ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. Another pretty good guest lined up for next week. Excited about this one. Episode will drop Wednesday as per usual. Everybody, have a great week.